Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my mother and co-host, Caroline Kilborn.
And hello, everyone. It's another beautiful day in Iowa, a little humid, but you know what? It makes the corn grow.
So they say. So they say. So, what are we talking about today?
Well, we have a most interesting guest today, and his book of poems, and the title of the book is "The Bomb That Blew Up God," and other serious poems by Freddie Niagara, excuse me, Fonseca, right? Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Fonseca, okay. And I was just really impressed with these poems. They just say so much, and there's a big variety of poems, a big variety the book is divided into different sections. Shards of Light is the first one, and then Dances, Music, and Magic, and The Bomb That Blew Up God is the third section. Then Vignettes is the next one. Do We Really Die? Some interesting ones in there. Strange Renewal and A New Dawn. And I don't know, just how long did it take you to write all these poems, Freddie?
A lot of the poems in there are really old, so it's kind of my life's work. So
okay.
I was writing in 69. So there are some poems from the early period, many of the middle period, so to say, and some fairly recent also.
So when did you start writing poems? Like, what age were you? Did you do this as a child and just kept going?
No, not at all. When I was young and then in school, I didn't care for poetry. I can't say I hated it, but I didn't care for it. And so in school, it didn't turn me on. But then after school, by chance, I found some anthology. I thought, oh, this is nice. I didn't know that poetry could be nice. I wasn't taking any action yet. But in 1969, when I was 29 years old, so you can figure out how old I am now, I was living in Rome. And at one point, a friend of mine from New York City came over to play in films as an actor. And I showed up the city a little bit, and there was this beautiful Borghese Park in Rome. And we went there, and we hit on a statue of Lord Byron. And on the pedestal, there was a verse of one of his famous poems. And I read that, and I'll read it to you real quickly. "But I have lived and have not lived in vain. My mind may lose its force, my blood its fire, and my frame perish even in conquering pain. But there is that within me which shall tire, torture, and time, and breathe when I expire." And believe it or not, the next day I started writing poems in English, which is my second language.
Well, you know, when maybe this is true of you too, Freddie. When I was younger and reading poetry, it seemed like everything had to rhyme. You know, like the first and third line had to rhyme the last word. But that's not necessarily true. And in Lord Byron's poem, it wasn't. So maybe that's what inspired you, that you realized that, yeah, it doesn't ever have to rhyme. It just has to mean something.
Yeah, that's what I'm after always, that it should mean something really big, something universal, if anywhere possible.
Mm-hmm. And something intelligible.
That too. And
that yes, exactly.
For the reader to be able to understand.
Yeah, you need to understand it, or at least get a glimmer of understanding from first reading, and if not, from the second. But not, you don't need it 50 times.
Right.
When you read it the 50th time, it should be so enjoyable that you're almost going to explode for joy. That usually doesn't happen.
So, you said that English was your second language, and what was your first?
Dutch.
Dutch. And you were born in?
Curaçao, that is in South America.
Okay. And you were living in, how did you get to Rome?
Oh, well, I very much liked opera. And before I went to Rome, I was very much interested in opera. So I heard a lot of Italian opera and I found the language so beautiful. And I visited Italy a few times. And the last time I visited, I went to Rome. And I thought, oh my God, this city is so beautiful. I want to live here for the rest of my life. So I saved up some money and I took some courses in Italian, which I already was doing, but some more in-depth courses. And I just went to Italy and I tried to survive there. And not knowing that I was going to write poetry, but I just went for the language and for the country.
Okay, and how long did you live there? Obviously not the rest of your life because you're now in Fairfield, Iowa.
Right, I didn't live that long there, 6 months. And I visited afterwards a few times also. But that first Byron poem, that was enough. I was hooked on writing poetry.
Wow.
And then my friend from the actor, he introduced me to especially American poetry, which I knew nothing about at that time. I read some British poems and German and Dutch and Italian. Actually, I've read in something like 5 languages. But American poetry was a new horizon for me. So, and then I started reading, like every day. There was a huge library in Rome. The American Library, I believe, was the name. And I went there every day. And I was mainly reading all of the American poets that I could find at the time.
What brought you to the United States?
Oh, MIU, the Marici International University. I wanted to study literature at that time.
And you've been here ever since?
Oh, I've been here ever since, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, but your poems, you're covering the whole world in here, it seems like. A lot of, South American poems. There's Antarctica. They're really from all over. Have you been to all these places that you've written about?
Oh, I've been to several. I mean, I've traveled, obviously, in the United States, but also in South America and in Europe. And as you know, Europe, there are a lot of countries there. And I went to many of them. And I went there to museums. And I just drank in the culture wherever I was. And, I know that it has kind of shaped my writing in many ways. Although I haven't been to all those countries that are mentioned in the book or cities, but my muse tells me where to go, and then, I have to obey.
So you travel in real life or you travel on the page?
Yeah, and there are even poems that are actually about the Milky Way and black holes, so I travel beyond the earth as well.
How do you decide what you're going to write about?
Well, I do not really decide. At some point, I feel something brewing. I get some inspiration of something. It could be anything, of course. And then it usually sentence forms, and it has a certain rhythm and a certain meaning. And I kind of feel that this might be something or it might go nowhere. But then the muse tells the poem how the poem wants to be written. And it can be at one time, it can be in rhyme, it can be a short poem, or it can be more like an epic poem, a long poem, or in free verse or whatever. And then I follow that lead as much as I can. And then it writes itself. I do a lot of editing. It's not so that I write a poem once and it is done. A few poems I've done very little editing, but most of them I have edited through the years. Every now and then I would, after a few years, I would maybe look look again at a certain poem and I think, wait a second, this phrase could be better if I do it like this and not like that. Mm-hmm. And so
I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you that if you rewrite very often, you know.
Yes, I do. Actually, it is much fun because every time that you rewrite it, actually, you find maybe a word or a phrase that is a lot better than the previous one, and that gives you more of the meaning. And that really is very exalting for myself. It's this kind of a joy. And actually, the poem is, according to me, never finished.
Well, that was what I was going to ask. When do you know when it's done, when it's finished?
At some point, I feel a certain satisfaction or contentment about it. And I reread it, reread it, and I let it sink in. And at some point, I just feel, right now, I really wouldn't know how I could do it any better. So that's what it is right now.
And do you wait until you reach that point before you publish the poem?
Yeah, generally I do, yeah. So, but in the past, I've published several poems in magazines and this and that. But they're all, most of them are in the book. But when I looked at them again, I have changed a few things here and there, just tweaking, to make it just a tad better.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Freddie Niagara Fonseca, and his book is The Bomb That Blew Up God and Other Serious Poems. Mom?
I was just going to ask you if this was his first book, or his first anthology, or if he had other ones before this.
I did an anthology 10 years ago in 2010. It's called This Enduring Gift, and it was a compilation of 76 poets who live or at any time in their lives have lived in Fairfield.
And we spoke with you about that poem back then, or about that book then, I believe.
Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm. But then this is my second book, and this is just poems of me, not anybody else.
Mm. What inspired you to put this book together?
Well, something like 3 years ago. 3 years ago, I really started working on it. And after actually a silence, believe it or not, of almost 7 years where I didn't do any, I didn't do much. I mean, I worked, I lived, and ate and drank, but not so much poetry. And then at some point I thought, I always wanted to have, of course, a significant book of poetry. And I better hurry, because I'm not a spring chicken anymore. So, and then I really went to work on it. And I was, at that time, practically writing every day. And I edited and re-edited and shared with friends for 3 years. And I listened to the feedback that they gave me. And they were not saying, you should do write this. But they would probably say something like, this stanza doesn't really work, or that one is really nice. And then I would go back and see, why doesn't it sound so good, that particular stanza? And I usually would find the reason why, and then I would just rewrite and tweak it. And that went on for 3 years, and then suddenly I thought, now we're going to do it.
So how many poems are in this book?
It's about 113, but actually a little bit more, because I have on one page, I have put a few haiku together, maybe like five or six, and counted them as one poem, because otherwise the book was already quite thick. I mean, it is like 181 pages, but then you have, of course, the front matter too. And so I try to minimize things a little bit, but there's 113 to maybe 120 poems, something like that.
And I'm assuming this is a subset of all the poems you've ever written. Do you have any idea how many you've written in your life?
Probably around 300 or something. Some of them are lost. Ah. With moves, you know, you move mm-hmm. them up.
Or new computers and you've, I mean, yeah, I have things on those old floppy disks. How do you ever recover that?
Yeah, things like that have happened. And also, you know, in the time that I was writing longhand, that I had these huge stacks of paper with drafts. And, you know, sometimes something got lost and it's just gone.
Yeah. How did you decide which poems would go in this book?
So at some point I had a pretty nice collection altogether. And then I discovered that that I could divide them in chapters. At that time, I didn't know it was going to be seven. But that though each of those chapters were of a certain subset of poems that I found belong together or go well together, let me put it that way. And so I did that, and then I put them in an order which I found, you know, that would best work best. And that's about it. It's actually very simple.
So tell us a little bit about how the book is organized.
Well, it's organized in seven chapters. And the first one is called Shards of Light. And actually, I wrote a synopsis, and I'll read you something from it. So chapter one, which is called Shards of Light, in the synopsis I say, Shards of Light begins in an uncertain universe of random smatterings of light on the verge of spiritual darkness. The poems in this chapter are mostly introspective, set in colorful locales on the globe and vast realms of the soul. Amidst all of this, we also find lighter content related to a growing awareness of light. So each of those chapters, I wrote a few paragraphs, sentences about them, and that goes on and on. And then every chapter, the mood totally changes, and the energy. And the last chapter is called A New Dawn. There I say, A New Dawn, the last chapter showcases poetry exclusively set in the natural world and how we respond to it. Here we take in nature at its most beautiful, epic, and uplifting. We witness the grand cycles of the universe turning. In a number of poems, we experience a measure of contentment, understanding, and appreciation of our existence. So that's the gamut of the whole book.
Now, some of the most fun poems are very rhythmic.
Most of those are in chapter two, but they're kind of sprinkled in almost each of them. There's always something that is very rhythmic and very energetic. So you want me to read one?
Yes, I'd like you to read one of the, from, is it Dances, Music, Magic?
Yeah.
Chapter? Yes.
Okay, so let's see what I'm going to read today. well, let me read with a tango. Start with a tango. Tango in Buenos Aires. A touch of Argentina. Ah. Sweeping dresses, blinking eyes, supple, rhythmical steps, and quite unexpected turns. A lot of space, and there is the tango on a hot tropical night in a sultry ballroom in steamy Buenos Aires. The blood is even hotter. Oh, deftly the dancers glide on a saucy rhythmical tune, glancing at one another again and again, while humming tangos on hot tropical nights where the moon sees everything in steamy Buenos Aires. Some of the lovers even sneak into the gardens before a tango is over. The rhythm goes on, yet the moon will keep silent. Ah, but that's how tangos are danced on hot tropical nights in the shadowy gardens of steamy, saucy, sultry Buenos Aires.
And have you visited Buenos Aires?
No, I haven't.
Oh. I thought surely you had.
Me too.
Yeah, I've just watched the tango and actually, this poem was the very first dance and music poem that I ever wrote. So actually, as you can see, there are several in the book, and there's actually some that I have that I am going to put in my second book. But this was the very first one. And I didn't have to change much about it. I just wrote itself and maybe a tweet here or there, and it was real fun. And I've performed it many, many, many times also with music. It was a lot of fun.
Freddie, tell us about Billy Belly's Boston Big Brass Band.
Oh, that's right. Well, I love brass bands. Probably most kids or a lot of people like the time when they like brass bands, you know, all those sounds and all the colors of the costumes and everything. At one point I felt this energy of brass bands was kind of resonating in me. And I thought, oh, gee, it seems that I need to read a poem about brass bands. And with that desire, I actually first started looking at brass bands from a more, you know, I would say, you know, scientific viewpoint, other than my experience of what I had seen, to make sure that whatever facts I would put in there, that it would be correct. And I mean, not pure fiction. So I read up a little about it, about the phenomenon of brass bands and its history. And then in the meantime, all kinds of ideas were coming up about the poem, and I started jotting them down. And at some point I put it all together.
And it's written to be read aloud by a group. Is that?
Oh, well, it could be, but that was not my goal, so to speak. Oh, but
okay.
Because
it says it's a nostalgic divertimento in four episodes for narrator, brass band, chorus, and merry audience.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I can, and you have like stage directions. So this is, I've never seen a poem written this way. Is this something that you've seen others do, or was this your own creation?
Well, I am indebted a little bit to the poet Vachel Lindsay, who has a poem from Springfield, Illinois, who had written, he lived in the first part of the 20th century until maybe, I think he died in the 40s or something, or maybe the 50s. And he wrote a lot of poems about sounds, the sounds of America, of cars, of trains, and music. And I really like him, and I've read a lot of him. And some of it spilled over in what I wrote in Billy Belly's Boston Big Brass Band. But I've never seen anywhere a poem about brass bands in the first place, but also handled like I have. That doesn't mean that doesn't exist, but I haven't seen it, and I've really read a lot of poems.
So this is quite a long poem, but could you read a stanza or two so we can get a feel for the rhythm?
Okay, yeah. So let me read from the second stanza, the second episode, which is called Adolescence in the Streets and Squares of Boston. That's the locale. Tararabumdie, what is going on today? We are out to see my favorite band in Boston. Friendly sunlight has been gleaming everywhere, brightening every glistening bell and valve and piston, every shining surface all around the sunny square. Everyone is glad today. Everyone is here today. Tarara, tarara, boom, day. Never, never leave us, Billy. Oh, we'll step along with you forever. Any Sunday down the streets and squares of Boston. Tarara, boom, day. Billy's band is great today. Billy in his towering bearskin shako, silver buttons, sash, and gold-striped pantaloons, emblems, buckle belt, and bulging jacket, starts parading with his bandsmen Sunday afternoon. All the flags are out today. All the world is great today. Tarara, tarara, boom, day. Never, never leave us, Billy. Oh, we'll march along with you forever. Any Sunday down the streets and squares of Boston. Tararabundie, let us sing and dance today. Bandstand chorus members sing of stars and glory. All of us embrace the grandeur of the themes. Overtures and marches speak of untold epic stories. All become one nation sharing lofty dreams. Let us celebrate today. Let us all unite today. Tarara, tarara, boom, die. Never, never leave us, Billy. Oh, we'll sing along with you forever. Any Sunday down the streets and squares of Boston.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and that was our guest, Freddie Fonseca, reading from one of the poems in The Bomb That Blew Up God and Other Serious Poems. So let's talk about your title poem.
Yes.
Yeah, well, the title poem is for some people provocative, for some people it's different. But actually, this is only a fable. It's a fable of our condition, so to speak, and how we, do not always follow God's ways. We think we're going to do something else. And that's one day this voice came up. Let me see where it is. And the first line is, the devil insisted on having the latest, baddest bombs tested, but God wasn't thrilled. So the subline is, it's a fable, and it is the true history of the Big Bang, which is, of course, is a joke. And, so I had written that and actually put it aside for a long time, and at some point I returned to it, and I showed it to a few people, and I said, oh, God, you need to publish that one. So I tweaked it a little bit more and so on, and thought, oh yeah, okay, that's gonna go then in chapter 3, because chapter 3 is all about conflict and adversity and how man tries to overcome adversity. That's in chapter 3, and then I thought, maybe you can use it as a title. So that's what happened.
Were there other runners up for the title?
I don't have them anymore, but some of them were quite wacky and some of them were just too peaceful, and since there's so many poems in this book that have a certain character, and it is actually impossible to make one statement for the whole book, because there's so many directions that the poems are going. So, and that's when I thought, maybe then we should have lift one poem out of there and group the rest around it. And I chose this.
So, Mom, what were some of your favorite poems in the book?
Well, the one that really, I would read some and then I would go a couple of pages, and I came upon this one on page 110, Nocturnal Squeaks, because talking about a house squeaking at night, and my house makes noises all the time. And it took me quite a while to get used to it. And I'm still not completely used to it, but this poem just really spoke to me. And I'm sure that I'm sure that if anybody who reads this book, there is a poem in here that will speak to them. I have no doubt about it.
Yeah, I have found that several people have bought my book so far. So they get a lot of books. It's quite amazing. And some people have mentioned, oh, this one or that one. And often it was a little bit to my surprise, because of course I have my favorites. And I'm always hoping that people say that, oh, I like that. Some of them do, but then others say something that, oh good. I'm glad you like it.
So what are your favorites, Freddie? Why don't you read us one of your favorites?
Okay, my absolute favorite is my poem about trees. And I read that very often with us because, yeah, for me, it's everything is in there. But then there's others, you know. Okay, I'm going to read it. The language of trees. I asked the trees one summer what they had been thinking of all year. They wouldn't say. But then I heard them wave and whisper of the ages, seasons, years and months and days, and countless hours of abundant happiness. I like the tales they tell me. Autumn makes them talk of leaving all, and yet they stay. And as they drop their leaves, they muse for weeks on April. Thrushes, stars, and lingering Indian summers, rain and latent loneliness. Their voice is low in winter. Snow and icy winds are on their minds, and they withdraw. But in their winter dreams, you hear how branches sing and think of dawn. The sun in distant countries, warmth, and summer peacefulness. How grand they are each season. Often have I seen them stand like kings. A certain awe surrounds their splendid forms. And so they wait for spring, for flowers, verdant prairies, butterflies in May, and simple loveliness. And then they speak of lovers. Sudden colors spread their message fast. And every year the many stories bloom and brighten noble pages, poems, gorgeous music, heart and mind with endless youthfulness. And so we welcome summer. All day long they stand and think and dream. And all we hear is how they wave again and whisper of the ages, seasons, years and months and days, and countless hours of unending happiness.
Freddie, trees are a fairly common subject for your poems, aren't they?
Yeah, I've written several about trees. They also creep in other poems of mine.
Yeah, I'm looking here. There's one about sequoias, and there's one about the trees of your childhood.
Right. And those are all in the last chapter, A New Dawn.
And you mentioned that when you were writing about the brass band that you researched, when you had the idea of writing a poem about it, that you started to research. Are there other topics that you've researched so that you could round the poem in reality?
Right. When I wrote the giant sequoia, I've never seen a giant sequoia in the first place. But of course, I've seen them on TV and read about them in books and this and that. And I heard a lot of reports from people who have been there, and then university people say they are in total awe when they are among those trees. And that sense, what they've told me, that actually prompted me to write a poem about it. But as I said, since I had never been there and I only knew spotily what they were and this and that, I thought it would be wise to read up about it. So I, for instance, then I found what the Latin name of it is and then decided to use it in the poem as well. And then that poem is really a hymn to the giant sequoia and also towards our condition, the human condition, how we aspire to become better and to live a good life and all that kind of thing. So that's all interweaving with in the poem. I write about the poem, but actually we write about ourselves.
Aha. Now the truth comes out. You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Freddie Niagara Fonseca, poet and author of The Bomb That Blew Up God. So there's quite a variety of poetic structures included in here. Do you intentionally experiment with different structures? Like, do you sit out and say, okay, I'm going to write a sonnet, I'm going to write I'm going to try haiku, I'm going to try, I don't even know the names of all of them. Some of them are very formal and some of them are very informal. Have you tried them all?
Not all. I mean, I'm sure there are forms in there that exist that I have never written about. But no, I do not intend to write a sonnet. I do not think I'm going to write it in rhyme. No, there's nothing like that. As I said earlier, my muse, or the muse, tells the poem how the poem wants to be written. So, and then I follow that lead. And so one time it is, it maybe it's very formal, very grand. Another time it is like playful, but the poem tells me, this is how I want to be seen. This is how I want to be heard.
And are there some that end up being like some of the forms that are very restrictive? That require a certain rhyming structure, a certain number of syllables per line.
What is the question?
Do any of your poems end up being, fitting any of those particular structures?
Yeah. So there, I haven't counted how many, but there are several that are rhymed, almost like in the old days. But if you read them, actually find out that it is not quite like they did it, but anyway, they rhyme, okay, and they have a certain rhythm, and some of them do not, and with other poems I sprinkle a rhyme inside of stanzas of a poem that is totally in free verse, so you never know what's going to happen. So you start reading and you think, oh, this is all free verses and that, and suddenly there is a sprinkling of rhyme in there, and then it goes back to not being in rhyme. It's always written. So that kind of thing that happens a lot. So I think that the gamut is from strict rhyme to whatever you want, but then with variations. So that there was I wouldn't say that I intended to be varied. But it is just my nature that I want to write in different styles. Why restrict yourself to just free verse of just this? Whether all those other forms exist, why not use them? And I think that my having read in 5 languages, poetry that is, I've been exposed to, other ways of writing poems than just purely in English or American. And I guess that some of that found a way into how I write. Mm.
And have you written poems in other languages?
Yes, but none of them were of the stature of what I'm doing now. Actually, the interesting thing was when I lived in Germany for a while, a year and a half or something, and I speak the language fairly well. I can chat and this and that. And a few times I was dreaming in German and poems came in German. I don't always remember them on waking up, but they came in German and they sounded beautiful. But I haven't written much of those down, and I certainly do not have them anymore.
It must be really challenging to translate poems into a different language, to be able to maintain the meaning and the rhythm, and if there's rhyme, the rhyme, it would seem almost impossible to do.
Yeah, that is true. So usually when I read translations of other poems, you always need to be a little bit suspect, because you don't know the person who translated, how much does he or she know those two languages, you know? And it is this, indeed, you cannot, it's very difficult to get the same sense of what the subject is and the music that is in the poem to have it in a different language. It is very rare, actually, that translates well. The funny thing is that I've read that famous poem by Edgar Allan Poe, The Raven, in maybe five languages or something. And I've read all those translations and put them next to each other, next to the English one, of course. And actually, two of them, I forget which language they were, it's been at least 40 years ago that I read them, were actually pretty good. And the other ones were kind of mediocre. But of course, the English one is superb. But sometimes it works, but most of the time, I think it doesn't.
There was another one that I really liked, because one thing I love about nature is when I can see a Canada geese flying in the V shape, you know, that they do, and I read that the one out in front, after a bit, then he drops back and lets the next guy take over so that he doesn't, the one in front doesn't get overtired, because he has to honk the most to keep them going. And the Wild Geese from Canada, this poem that you wrote, I really enjoyed that.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to hear that. You want to hear it?
Sure.
Let me see that. So I don't think.
On page 122.
122. Okay. Yeah, that was kind of a joke, you know. Okay, wild geese from Canada. There's big cackling in the night. The geese have left their nests in Canada and pass our home en route to Florida. I trust they'll find their goal all right. Nature leads them where to go. They formed a gaggling band and off they went. And now they fade and think they all will spend a winter minus all that snow. Autumn has been making giant strides. We have seen such early signs before. The cold will follow pretty soon, and snow will bolt each little home on every side. Now, we are happy here and share, and if we can't remove the snow alone, we'll still be fine, for there's enough at home to feed us while we loaf and care. But if winter storms would cause us harm, we could decide to spread our arms and try to join those geese and leave to nature why she wants us where it's snug and warm. Something really weird is in the air. I'm getting lighter, almost like a feather. Is something pulling me to better weather? Let's ask our feathered friends up there. Here's the window, there the sky. We're taking off together, wing to wing. We're flying down to Florida to spring. Bye-bye now, Iowa. Goodbye to Florida, Florida. But what was that? I heard a chuckle coming from your mouth. You're cackling while you're flapping south. Oh, are you nudging me or what? There was a tapping on my shoulder. We're catching up now with our flock and kin and should be hitting Florida by 9 a.m. Strange enough, it's getting colder. But hey, all is well that ends well. We are quickly heading down now for the landing, flapping closely just like geese of standing. But you are wiggling here like hell. Ah, oh, you're just tossing and turning tonight. We've been in bed to dream of warmer Florida, like gaggles flying by from good old Canada. We are staying home to snuggle up all right.
Now, yeah. Freddie, most of your poems have some humor in them. Do you have any in this book that are really serious?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, for instance, the giant sequoia is a hymn, and it is totally serious.
Okay.
I just have to put something in, and it is.
Well, you know, the giant sequoia and the other poems about tree remind me of that favorite little poem that everybody probably has heard. I think that I have never seen a poem as lovely as a tree.
Oh yeah.
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 Right.
Anybody know where that came from?
It was written by, I believe, a British poet in the 19th century. At the moment, I cannot think of his name. It's a fairly short poem, maybe 15 lines or so, 16 lines or something. It's not a sonnet, but it just goes A, B, B, C, C, right. And yeah, it's a lovely poem. And it was very famous in its day.
Yeah. Joyce Kilmer. I just Googled it, and it was
Oh, you can Google anything.
That's it.
Freddie, did anyone ever put any of your poems to music, or did you ever put any of your poems to music?
Well, actually, I performed with a local pianist and composer, Nathaniel Zumstein, and we have very often performed together with him playing on the piano. He's also a pianist and a composer. And he has this uncanny capability of tuning in to the mood of the poem and how I read it. So sometimes when I'm reading a certain phrase out loud and I do it maybe a little bit different than I did the last time, he catches up on it and then he does something on the piano, which I cannot do, but he can. And then it moves the dynamics and then it inspires me to be even more expressive, and it inspires him to do so. And then at some point, we are, you know, in no man's land. We don't know where we're going, but it's total bliss. I've done that many, many times.
Well, it does seem like some of your poems could become lyrics to songs.
No, yeah, that is true. Yeah, yeah. But nobody has done anything. We have performed several of those poems with him. And actually, I've been envisioning to do the grand opening, you know, when this book comes out, to do a poetry concert, a grand poetry concert and book signing in Cafe Paradiso here in Fairfield. And I would like to do that with not only this pianist, but also with maybe five or six more instruments. And I have some ideas of which instruments would go with certain poems. And I would introduce that to the musicians and see how they can handle it. But since COVID is around, I have no idea when such a performance is going to take place, but yeah, sometime in the future.
Freddie, have you written any poems about the pandemic?
No. Actually, these were written, my book was written before that. And
well, I know, but are you still writing, I assume?
Yeah, but nothing has come about the pandemic. But then I have to say, this desire to write about current subjects to me is always dated, because at some point that problem is going to be over, and then it is, you know, doesn't matter that much. I rather write something that can hopefully be appreciated timelessly through the ages. So not this particular event or something in history, which might be interesting at the time, but 10 years later, what was that about? It isn't of any interest anymore. And so I feel that poetry is served best by writing something that goes much deeper and more timeless. But that is my opinion, I should say.
So, Freddie, let's talk about how you published this book.
Okay, so it is printed. It's not quite yet published. It's going to be published on September 1st. It's been published through First World Publishing. And this publishing company has fortunately all the content and stuff. But also, I'm able to buy copies from him at cost and then sell them at the list price or less. And so this publishing company is kind of a hybrid. Publishing companies, they take care of everything. And on the other side of the fence, you have the authors, they have their book printed, and that is then a book of a print on demand. But this publishing company just melds these two things together. And I'm quite happy with that. I'm astounded how many books I have sold. I'm not at all a millionaire yet.
So where can someone buy your book?
On my website or when they see me in the street.
And what is your website?
Actually, it is fonseca-poems.org. But if you look up just the title, The Bomb That Blew Up God, you will see it at the top of all the charts.
And once it comes out, it's formally published on September 1st, then readers would also be able to buy it on Amazon. And
it will be available actually worldwide, because they can have it printed in on all continents.
Now, I understand you've had some great published reviews.
Yeah, well, Book Life, together with Publishers Weekly, wrote a wonderful review. Yeah, I was very happy with that. That came in about 2 weeks ago.
And how did you get the book in their hands?
Well, I went to their website and looked at their guidelines and I followed those and looked at it. So Publisher Weekly did not review it. I hear that Publishers Weekly gets something like 10,000 poems a month. So
whoa,
that's a lot. So they passed me over for one reason or other. But then Book Life, who works together with them, but they have to make their own decisions, it seems, they decided to take my work and look at it, and then they came up with this wonderful review.
And what are some of the other ways that you're marketing and publicizing the book?
Oh, well, I have my website, of course, and I have a big mailing list, and so I've been writing to many people, and really wrote forum letters with samples of my poems, or at least my web address. And I also have been very active on Facebook and Instagram. And, you know, sometimes people that have never talked about this, I want your book. Well, okay, here it is.
Now, I see on your website you have videos.
Yes, yes.
So what are those?
Oh, videos of some of my poems.
Is it like of times when you did readings, or is it like a more produced video?
No, that was mostly from the times that I was did readings. Yeah, so I've always kept those, of course, and now they came in handy.
Yeah,
several recordings. Some of them are in audio, and some are on video, and they are all on my website.
You said you're working on a second book?
Yeah, I have some ideas. Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Do you do any other types of writing other than poetry?
Actually not. No. So, I have one time, you know, many years ago, I thought about a novel, and I think I started with a few pages, but I just felt, you know, that this is not what I can do. I'm better writing as something more succinct as poetry, you know. I stuck to that.
Do you work with other poets at all?
What do you mean?
Well, like writing groups or?
Oh, no. I've never been so enthusiastic about that. You know, you sit together and you criticize each other's poems. You know, what does that do? That doesn't work for me. I understand that for some people it works extremely well, but I didn't feel like it. I have read a lot of poetry, and from all ages and all eras, or many of them, and that has been. Those have been my teachers. Just reading and reading in several languages and all kinds of poems. Hmm. And so I'm, you know, self-taught, everything.
Well, Freddie, we're about out of time. Mm-hmm. And we're very glad to have had you here today. I want to mention again that you can buy Freddie's book, The Bomb That Blew Up God, at fonseca-poems.org, or just Google The Bomb That Blew Up God, because there probably aren't too many other things that will come up other than that.
You know, I have one last poem that I'd like to read.
Okay.
So that is humorous, but it is also, well, I would say spiritual, but it is kind of, it's about the universe, and you can find all kinds of things in there other than that it is a little humorous. And it is called Black Hole. I used to go through life quite flat-footed. Back then, the sidewalk would stick to my heels. But I've grown up quite a bit, touching the stars way up here. Far below, there's Earth still kicking. My body? It's being nebulous and probably stretching all over the Milky Way right now. My heart is somewhere in the middle, and it is awfully wide. In fact, there's a huge gap in my chest, and I'm breathing the universe in and out night and day. A black hole is all that I really am, and I've dropped all contact with matter for sure. But hey, I am enjoying my space here immensely.
Thank you, Freddie.
Yep.
And Mom, do you have a closing quote for us today?
It's one that he had in one of his poems, Almost Summer, and the poem was from a Chuang Aizu. Happiness is the absence of the striving for happiness.
Yeah, that's a nice quote. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being with us today, Freddie. Thank you, Mom. And see you all next week on Writers' Voices.